This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Tuesday edition of Game Misconduct. I am Don LaGreca. Just one game to go over from last night. Blues take a 2-1 series lead. They win in Dallas 4-3. And I told you, every one of these games, however long the series is going to last, is going to be one goal and just hold on for dear life, because I think these two teams are very evenly matched. They exchange goals in the first period, Schwartz and Radulov, and then Bozak makes it 2-1 Blues. He scores midway through the second period, and it's 2-1, and then just a barrage of goals. Four goals, two apiece, but Pat Maroon's goal at 18:22 of the third period proves to be the game winner. You got to feel good for Maroon. He's kind of bounced around a lot over the last few years. Edmonton, Anaheim, New Jersey. Seems like he's found a home here in St. Louis. Scores a huge goal. Bouwmeester gets his fifth assist of the playoffs so far for the game winner. This after Cogliano had tied the game at two with less than 7 minutes to play in regulation with a shorthanded goal. But on that same power play, Petrangelo gives the Blues the 3-2 lead back, but then Tyler Seguin gets a great feed from Heskinen, and then Zuccarello gets the secondary assist, and that came with about 4 minutes left to go in regulation to tie it at three, only for Maroon to get the job done. And it's guys like Maroon, it's guys like Cogliano, those are the ones that end up winning these series. You know, the Blues have Tarasenko, they have Schwartz, they've got some really good offensive players, and of course we know the Blues with Ben and Seguin and Radulov, and certainly Radulov scored last night. But sometimes it's those second-line players, third-line players, and even fourth-line players. You get the ice time, you're expected to perform. This is not the old days where a fourth line is going to play like 5 minutes. They're going to get their ice time, you're going to roll four lines, and especially late in games when teams are exhausted and players are exhausted, those fourth lines can definitely produce, and those third lines can produce as well. So sometimes it's those secondary and tertiary players that get the job done, and I just think that every game the rest of this series is going to be that close. So game four still in Dallas coming up tomorrow, and I'm going to be doing the pre and post for that on Westwood One, so check your local listings. The pregame will start at 9:15 for that. Faceoff will be set for 9:30, and that series, I think, has a chance to go the distance, and I would not be surprised at all if we ended up seeing a couple of overtimes between now and the end of that series. So we've got tonight, and tonight we've got two games. They get back to work now with the Bruins and the Blue Jackets as the scene shifts to Columbus. And Brandon Dubinsky laid the gauntlet down after the Game 2 overtime victory and said that the crowd in Columbus is certainly going to be louder than the crowd was the first two games in Boston. I think it's going to be loud, but I wouldn't want to compare the two buildings, but Dubinsky did. So he's feeling it after the double overtime win in Game 2 to even that best of seven series up. Columbus has to feel very good about themselves. They've lost just one game in these playoffs, and that came in overtime in game one of this series. Boston's been good on the road, so this should be a fun series. Game three is always pivotal, right? No matter whether it's tied at one or somebody's up two games to none, it could be huge. So we'll see. Columbus in the second round for the first time ever, and really a chance to maybe take, if not control, at least a step towards the conference final tonight and see if they can't feed off of that double overtime victory back on Saturday. And a huge break, I think, for the Bruins, because they had to go seven games with Toronto, rival, and they got the extra couple of days off here between games two and three. I think that benefits the Bruins more than it benefits the Blue Jackets. Blue Jackets probably wanted to climb right on the ice the next day after that thrilling double overtime win. But the extra rest is going to help some of the older bodies on the Boston Bruins. So I think this is going to be feisty. I think this is going to be fun. Remember, the Bruins have played three more games than the Columbus Blue Jackets. So that extra day off is going to be huge for Boston. Sharks and the Avalanche. That's coming up at 10 o'clock tonight. Of course, the Sharks lost in Game 2 with the Avalanche coming up big with a good big second period. So we'll see what the Sharks do. Remember, they've been kind of back and forth here before. Just when you think the Sharks have it figured out, they end up losing a couple of games in a row. And the Avalanche have proven to everyone here how legit they are. The disposal of Calgary in the first round, the bounce back in Game 2. Now that crowd is going to be crazy. And I think Denver is going to be a fun place to play here. Last night they played Game 1 between the Nuggets and the Portland Trailblazers in the NBA, and then tonight it'll be game three between the Sharks and the Avalanche. Back to the NBA tomorrow, and then the Pepsi Center will host game four between the Sharks and the Avalanche. And since the Avalanche moved from Quebec for the start of the 94-95 season, There has never been the Nuggets and the Avalanche both playing in the second round. So here we are entering the month of May, and Denver is going to be electric with some basketball and with some hockey. So good job out of the Pepsi Center, and a really good job out of the Avalanche and the Nuggets. Nuggets won their game last night. See if the Avalanche can't take a 2-1 series lead. I think this is set up to be a classic. Same with the Stars and the Blues, the other Western Conference series, where I think both are destined to go far, and it's a flip of the coin which of these teams are going to win. And I think all of them have a chance to end up winning the Stanley Cup at the end of the day. Why not? Because the winner of these series are going to go to the conference final. So one of them in the conference final is going to go to the final, and who the heck knows what happens from there. I mean, that's how much is on the line. With all the big guns being gone and all the division winners being eliminated, the Cup literally can end up anywhere. So that's a big deal. A couple other footnotes before we get to your tweets. Game 3 between the Hurricanes and the Islanders will be played tomorrow, so both those two teams got an extra day's rest, which certainly benefits the Hurricanes. We'll talk a little bit more about this tomorrow, but it looks like Svechnikov is going to be ready for that Game 3. That's huge for the Hurricanes, who already lead the best-of-seven series 2-0. So that's going to be huge for them to be able to add that extra body. But Mrazek is not going to go in Game 3, so Curtis McElhinney will get the start there. So the Mrazek injury, originally listed as day-to-day, he's not going to be available for Game 3 as of the recording of this podcast now. So I don't know if that's a benefit or a detriment, the way McElhinney played in that Game 2 on the road, coming in for the injured Mrazek. A monster is being created there in Carolina. It just adds to the whole spark of Cinderella that the Hurricanes have been able to really ride through these playoffs. So I'm not really sure that's necessarily a bad thing. And to get the extra scoring back with Svechnikov getting back into the lineup, the Islanders are in a must-win situation. Listen, it's only happened 4 times in the history of the sport, so it's really not going on much of a limb to say they're not coming back from 3-0 down. So see if the Islanders can't get back to their winning ways. Brooklyn obviously was not a place to play offensively for the Islanders, only scoring 1 goal in the 2 games there. We'll see if the road is going to be a little bit better. Also, some news involving the New York Rangers and the Carolina Hurricanes. Adam Fox has been traded to the New York Rangers. He was originally drafted back in 2016, 66th overall by the Calgary Flames. Young defenseman from Harvard, excellent hockey player, all of 21 years old actually, was involved in that deal that sent all those players from Calgary to Carolina. If you remember last year, the Hannafins obviously were involved in that, Hamilton as well. Well, so was Fox. So Fox was a property of the Carolina Hurricanes, now traded to the New York Rangers for a conditional third-round pick. My understanding is that if he plays 30-plus games for the Rangers this upcoming season, well, then that third-round pick would become a second-round pick. Now, he's got a tremendous amount of talent. Rangers adding to the young talent that they've added on the blue line. This also now leads you to believe that if they can sign Fox to a contract and have him be part of the team for the 2019-2020 season, what does that mean for Shattenkirk? A lot of rumors surrounding, is Shattenkirk a possible buyout? Doesn't seem to fit in what the Rangers are doing with the younger players and the rebuild. Remember, Shattenkirk was brought here during the offseason, A, because he was a local kid, but also the Rangers thought that they were competing for a Stanley Cup and that he would be a nice addition for a team that was trying to march forward, especially be the point man on the power play. Hasn't really worked out. Not necessarily Shattenkirk's fault. I think he's a good player and I think he belongs in this league. I just don't think that since the letter was sent out last February and the Rangers were in this rebuild, whether Shattenkirk really fit in that. And now with an addition of another young defenseman for the New York Rangers, you just wonder if this will now spell maybe an exit strategy for Shattenkirk to maybe play somebody else or play for somebody else next year. So we'll see. So footnotes around the playoffs. Of course, the 2 games tonight to go over. But let's close out the podcast with your tweets. Mario tweets, "Hey Don, if all of the wild card teams make it to the conference final, do you think that will be the first time it has ever happened in the sport's history? In the beginning of the season, who would have ever put the Columbus Blue Jackets, the Carolina Hurricanes conference final together?" Well, under this format, certainly it is. And I cannot remember the bottom 4 teams all making it. Usually there's one team that has a high seed that makes it all the way, but under this current format that's been around for the last few years, it's the first time it's ever happened. The lowest seeds, I think that in 2012, the Devils were a 6 and the Kings were an 8. So I do think in 2012, when you look at it, the Devils ended up beating the Rangers in the conference final. The Rangers were the one seed in the Eastern Conference, so it didn't happen then, but I think that's the closest it's happened in recent memory. And if you go back a long ways, you saw that the dominant teams in the regular season always seemed to perform very well in the postseason. You'd see occasional President's Trophy winners, eights beat one, seven beats two, but to have it happen with all of the seeds going out early. Now, the Boston Bruins are still very much alive. I mean, they would have won any division they were in if not for the division that they were stuck in with the Tampa Bay Lightning. So Boston can screw all that up by winning. But you're right. If it's Columbus, it's Carolina making it to the conference final in the East. And if it's Dallas and Colorado in the West, it would just be unbelievable just how crazy these playoffs have been. But we'll see. Islanders came close to winning their division. They're still alive. Boston Bruins are tied 1-1 with Columbus, so they're still very much alive. St. Louis Blues, who actually spent a portion of the last day of the regular season in first place in the Central, and then later on that day, Winnipeg and Nashville won, and that knocked St. Louis out of first place, ended up dropping down to third, but they did have a share of first place on the last day of the regular season. That's how close the Blues came to be a division winner. So in the other divisions, it was still very close. Islanders were not that far back behind Washington. San Jose spent some time in first place in the Pacific before they kind of fell off the last month of the season. So really, the only division where it was just shocking to see the first place team go out was Tampa, who had a 21-point lead on Boston, which is kind of strange to get knocked out of the first round the way that they did. But Boston, I think, is every bit as good as a division winner. They just happened to be stuck in that Atlantic division that nobody was going to win but the Lightning in the regular season. So we're still a little ways away from seeing all four wild card teams make the run, but we'll have to wait and see how it works out. David says, love the Game Misconduct podcast. Listen to it all the time, and it really keeps me updated with the NHL. Well, we appreciate that, David. Chris is back. He says, hi, Don. It's been about a week since the San Jose-Vegas Game 7. Do you think that game is amongst the all-time series deciding games with New York versus New Jersey in 94, Calgary, Vancouver in 89, highly underrated, and Washington and the Islanders in 86. Well, I guess you meant 87 with the Washington Islanders, because that was the Easter epic, which I believe was in 87. But, and you know how much I love the Vancouver Calgary in 89. I've talked about this on the podcast many times. And of course, New York and New Jersey, unbelievable, with it going to overtime on the Mato goal. But you know what? First round shouldn't deter it, right? I mean, because Calgary, Vancouver was in the first round and the Devils and the Rangers were in conference finals. So is it hard to put a series that was in the first round up amongst the greatest ever? Why not? Especially when you take a look at the way things are kind of panning out here, in the postseason, where these teams could end up winning a cup. I mean, what makes that 89 series so thrilling between Calgary and Vancouver is the Flames go to Game 7, they go to overtime, that close to being eliminated in the first round, they would go on to win the Stanley Cup. So it's possible that the winner between San Jose and Vegas could end up winning the Cup. The Sharks win, they're definitely in the conversation of winning the Stanley Cup. So yeah, I think it has to be in that conversation. First of all, it was a great series. San Jose comes back from 3-1 down. Martin Jones goes from the GOAT to the hero. You get a classic overtime with a classic finish in the third period. So no, it would have to be up there. History will ultimately determine it. Would a little of the spice be gone if the Sharks were to lose to Colorado and could not advance beyond the second round after that thrilling win? I think that might be part of it. Of course, the Rangers go on to win the Stanley Cup after overcoming blowing that lead in Game 7. Of course, Calgary wins the Stanley Cup with their classic. The Islanders really didn't go very far after that, so maybe that kind of takes a little bit of that away. We'll see where it ends up happening with the San Jose Sharks. Ari says, regarding the Devin Taves kick no goal, should the rule be that the kicked puck must be a shot on goal to be disallowed? A puck kicked from behind the goal line that ricochets off someone should count. Well, here's the problem, and you've got the Islanders logo on your avatar here, so you certainly have a dog in the fight. Here's what I'd say. It ends up on net, right? So every shot that's taken isn't necessarily a shot on goal, but if it ends up being a shot on goal deflecting off of somebody, say your own player, it's still a shot on goal. It still ends up being a goal, even though your intention might have been to pass it. So your intention might have not been to shoot it on goal, but it still ended up in the net. So I think it ends up having to be disallowed because now it applies to it being a kicking motion that led to the goal. I think that's the semantics of it, is it ended up being a goal because you kicked it. You may not have intended to kick it. Maybe you were trying to center it. Maybe you were trying to kick it to your stick and it missed and it bounced off of somebody else and went into the net. It still went into the net in the result of you kicking the puck. And a distinct kicking motion cannot lead to a goal. And that's why they have the rule in, if I kick at the puck and it deflects off another team's defenseman, off the goaltender's pad and in, it's not going to count. Why? Because the original shot was a distinct kicking motion. Because it went into the net, it then becomes officially a shot. Since the shot was taken illegally, the goal is taken off the board. So I understand where you're coming from, Ari, that maybe that wasn't Taves' intention when he kicked at it. But think of the Pandora's box you would open if they changed the rule to the way you would like it. Well, you're behind the net. You're kicking it to the front of the net. You're passing the puck. So why should the goal be disallowed? But what if it's not as clear-cut as being behind the net? What if it was in front of the net? And I could say, well, listen, I kicked it. It deflected off somebody. I was trying to pass it, but maybe the player, maybe he's skilled. These guys play soccer all the time before the games. Their hand-eye coordination is tremendous, and certainly their footwork is even better. So I can kick it towards a skate from the other team trying to bank it in because my stick is being held or I can't get an angle at the puck. And my intention was to score the goal, but hey, no, I wasn't shooting it towards the net. I was shooting it, looking to center past the defenseman. It just happened to go off a skate and in when the intention in your mind all along was to have that exact thing happen. So I think the way the rule is stated is the right way that it should be. And I understand we've heard nothing but complaints about the officiating, but on that particular point, I think they got it right. The fact that they blew the whistle with the puck loss when it was in the corner earlier, later in the game, that's something that certainly Islander fans could complain about, but I'm sure if I took a Hurricanes fan aside and asked him, have you been happy with the officiating, they can go back to some of the things that happened against them as well. So I think you've got enough to complain about if you're an Islander fan, but that particular play on the Taves, I think they got it right, and I don't think changing the rule would make a lot of sense. I like what EJ was saying yesterday about the replay of replaying delay a game, replaying high sticks, but when you start getting into judgment calls, I think that is very dicey and probably not the right way to go. So we got a couple of games tomorrow to recap. Things are beginning to heat up. We're getting deeper and deeper into the second round. Back with you again tomorrow. Should be a lot of fun. You want to get in touch with me between now and then. Best way to do it is at Don LaGreca, hashtag game misconduct. You have to remember the game misconduct. Otherwise, I won't necessarily see it. So definitely use hashtag game misconduct. Back with you again tomorrow. This was the Tuesday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct Podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct Podcast on the ESPN app, Google Play Music, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.